Welcome to the final episode of Series 14 of York Hospital Ball, the series that has a focus on cult heroes, and who better to finish off than with the brilliant Gary Swan. Although Gary's home city is York, he started his career with Hull City, but eventually made his way to Bootham Crescent in 1992. Despite being in the heart of York City's midfield, Gary's first goals for the club didn't come until the end of season playoffs, but there he netted in both the semi and final to become forever etched in York City folklore. Gary's 2-year spell with the club was hugely successful, and here he talks in detail about his time with the club as well as his wider career. This episode is proudly sponsored by regular sponsors, the nearly departed app for iPhone. As ever, we are really grateful for their support. If you travel by train, you need Nearly Departed. Whether you're traveling to work or an away game, Nearly Departed will help you get there by showing live updates for your train service. The app has been carefully made by a York City supporter and is available in the Apple App Store. So download Nearly Departed today and then enter the offer code York, capital letters YORK, inside the app to get the first 6 months usage free. But for now, and the final time this series, please enjoy Gary Swan.
So Gary, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to the podcast. You played in my very first game that I went to, which we won 4-0 against Wrexham in 1992. And I supported my hometown club from that moment on. So you were also born in the city. So tell us a little bit about you growing up in York and how you got into football. And did you ever go to Bootham Crescent as a kid?
I did go to Bootham Crescent as a kid, yeah. The smell of the coffee beans was the main thing coming over the crowd, especially at night with the lights on. It was great. You know, you see the grass glistening. So yeah, used to watch a few games there with my dad and my brother. Grew up in York in Acombe. Went to the local schools there, Carl Lane, junior and primary school. Good teacher, Mr. Wilmot, spotted me in the juniors and got me into York boys and school boys and stuff like that. And then on to Beckfield Lane, secondary school, and started playing more school footballs. So that was on a Saturday morning. We played various schools in the area. Tadcaster was one of them, one of your schools. So we did that. Managed to get spotted by a Hull City scout in those days. So my York weekend was playing Saturday morning football for the school, then playing for the youth club in the under-19s, even though I was only 14. And then Sunday was all about going to intermediate junior levels. So I was playing for Dringhouses, then on to Lehman Road. Gary Ford was there at York, so Fordy was there. And we had a great team, brilliant teams, lots of good players that we had. I remember for Dringhouses, we played a game on the Hobmoor there, and I think we won 26-0, and we were so charged up to win the game even more. We were getting the ball out the net, running back to the half circle and really getting ready to kick off again, to win it back and go and score. And I think some like Aidan Butterworth there, who played for Leeds, he ended up with about 14 goals, you know, and we were trying to catch him up all the time. So good memories of playing there, and then playing junior football again in the afternoon. So I played 4 games at a weekend, and then school during the week, sometimes playing at older age group, and eventually went with my brother at Railway Institute for a while, for the last sort of when I was about 14, 15, before I went on to play for Hull.
And was there a choice then between signing for Hull or for York, or was it that Hull were a bigger club at the time? What was the sort of thought process?
At the time, Hull had a scouting system, and they had a scout in York, and he'd seen me a few times and eventually got me over to Hull in the holidays, and they wanted me to sign schoolboy forms in those days. So when you were 14 to 16, you signed his schoolboy forms. So you couldn't really go to any other club, but you went there and they would then take you in the holidays and you play games and train and do all sorts of various other things as well to bring you to the stage where you might get picked as an apprentice. So I was doing that really rather than being at York. But I was still playing York schools, North Yorkshire boys, under 19s, under 15s. We had the Yorkshire boys team in those days for schools. So that was the under 15 side. We managed to win the national trophy, going through the cup competitions and end up winning that as well. Aidan was up front as well for us. We had some really good lads from Bradford, Leeds and other places in that team. So I was doing Yorkshire stuff and York schools and everything else, and then playing for local sides. And then in the holidays, I was going over to Hull. So that was my sort of period of time. That was 74 to 76, 78 sort of thing.
Yeah, you were a busy boy.
Yeah, just a bit, yeah.
And if my research is correct, I think you scored a hat trick for the whole youth team, didn't you, against York City, and were quite part of a real successful youth team.
We had a very good youth team at Hull at the time. We had sort of two lots of apprenticeships. We had the first years and the second, and I was in the first year. Second years was people like Gareth Roberts. Steve McLaren was a second year. He was come through from York, so I knew Steve anyway. We used to go over there quite a lot to Hull. He told me a lot about what was going on. So we had a great team who were pushing forward into first teams and stuff like that. And yeah, we did beat York, I think it was like 7-0 or something. And I scored a hat trick. I think it scored left, right and header or something like that. But those are the days, you know, I was playing midfield, getting forward, or I was playing centre-half, or playing right-back, left-back. It was where you fit into the team itself.
Yeah, that was one of my questions actually later on, was that I couldn't work out. Sometimes you looked like you were playing right-back, sometimes it looked like you were in midfield. So I wondered what was your sort of preferred position growing up?
Well, growing up, I thought I was a centre-half, but I could play out from the back and I could read the game very, very well. And then it depends who's in what position when you're playing for different teams and where the manager thought or the coach thought you could play best on that game or on that day or for the period. And I was quite adaptable. I was versatile. I could play left-footed. I could play right-footed on the left side. Same on the right, play across anywhere across the midfield, centre-half, even sweeper. They played me a few times because I could read that. And, you know, there was a need at the time to shore up the goals. So, yeah, that was I could play anywhere. I even went in goal for the goalkeeper when he got sent off a couple of times as well in league games. So it was one of those things where if I'd have stayed in one position, I think I'd have played less games, less opportunities.
Yeah. And I think you made your first team debut at 18 in an Anglo-Scottish Cup game, which I wasn't familiar with that competition. I think it was against Sheffield United. I mean, Hull, yeah. Sheffield United doesn't sound like a typical Anglo-Scottish game, but what's your memories of making your first team debut?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's a cup game, it's an evening game, I think it was, playing at Sheffield United, Bramall Lane. For me, coming on at 18 and playing that, it's dream come true as a young lad wanting to be a footballer and, you know, trying really hard for a couple of years. Suddenly you get the break and you get the chance. But you're still young, you're still naive, you've got experienced pros around you telling you how to play the game. But yeah, I really enjoyed stepping into it. And it's the same when you're playing junior level and then you're going into reserves and the lights and playing on big pitches and big grounds against people who, you know, could be pros who are coming back from injury or people want to make a difference. So, you know, you're slowly getting used to the world of professional football. And making a debut, which is always, wherever it is, you know, it's the same for everybody. You're really happy that it's happened. And if you can get a win out, it'd be great.
Yeah. And I think you scored your first goal against Portsmouth in September 1980. I mean, that must have been a real special moment. And I couldn't work out, again, if you were you playing right back at this point? Were you in midfield? Where were you on the pitch? Were you in goal?
I was right back at that point, I think, for Hull. It's one of those games where you can get forward, and if you get forward, you get an opportunity, and then something will happen, and then it, you know, a loose ball might come, and you got a chance. But you're in the right place at the right time, so I could read that, and I had a good shot on me. I knew where goal was, so you just take the opportunities at that stage. I think I came on a sub a few weeks before that at home to Exeter, and it's one of those games where it was so close, and I think 2 minutes to go, the player 1-2 with the striker, and I slotted the ball home, which was great. Ran away to the crowd, but linesman put his flag up, and literally I must have been half a millimetre offside. Otherwise, that would have been my first goal a few weeks earlier. So it just depends when things happen.
And it looks from the outside like it was a great time to be playing for Hull City. I mean, they'd sort of come out of a bit of a slump, I think, and you were promoted in 1983 to Division 3, then to Division 2 in 1985, and you only lost out on promotion the year before on the last day of the season by a single goal. So that must have been a hell of a time to be part of Hull City.
Let's call it the ups and downs of Hull City, because 78, when I first signed apprentice, 80 turned pro, we still had a lot of the older players in the side, the more experienced, before they started to leave and what have you. So we were a very young group in 80, 81. We got to 82 with now 2 or 3 years together, and we started to play good football, and we got some extra players in. We had Brian Marwood there scoring goals, you know, ex-Arsenal. Billy Whitehurst came in, you know. So things like this started to change. Still had Stephen Stack, McLaren, Gareth Roberts, all those sort of people. But we had a problem. The club went into receivership, and we got relegated as well. So went down to the fourth division, receivership, all our contracts were ripped up. It was one of those things where, what are the club going to do? Because all the players were up for sale. Every bit of kit, balls, everything. So that was a really tough time. And the senior pros basically took a pay cut to allow to keep most of the players, which was great. And that gelled us together for that following season. Again, Mike Smith was in charge at the time, and that changed. Colin Appleton came in from Scarborough and the new chairman. That changed things. He had a different way of working. And yes, that last game of the season to try and go up by one goal to make it 2-0. We were 2-0 up within 20 minutes, I think. Maybe 60 minutes. Brian Moore scored both of the goals. And we had one goal to get to go up. And we just couldn't beat Burnley on the night. So Sheffield United went up.
Wow. And Hull City seem to have this sort of thing with financial problems, don't they? Because I'm pretty sure in the 90s, when I was growing up, it was a similar sort of tale. And I think they were locked out the gates at one point, weren't they? I was also reading about the late Chris Chilton, who was a coach, I think, at the time. And it sounds like he was a massive influence on your career.
Chilo was. He signed me as an apprentice. I had him as a coach in the youth side. He got promoted to reserve team, then first team. So as he went up, I sort of tagged along as such. And he was great. He was a real hard footballer, hard man, but fair. And he taught us a lot about what strikers are doing, how you're going to read it, how you're going to react to it, what you're going to do in this situation. And we'd play five-a-side in the afternoon, and it was like the kids against the staff. And experienced pros, and Chilo was up front against me. Jesus, we just got battered against the walls all the time. But it taught us that how to play the game. And he had a lot of influence on other strikers as well that brought through. But it was good times.
Yeah, and you mentioned he was a bit of a hard man. I mean, Billy Whitehurst is probably as hard as to get, isn't he, in football? So what was he like training with and as a teammate?
Billy, you had to get on the right side of Billy. Now, I was lucky. I was in digs with Billy. For a while. So you get to understand how he is and how he plays. But also, he was learning. He was a massive learning curve, and he admits it as well. You know, he can track a bag of cement under his foot. It just, everything would go. And slowly, with working with Chilo and understanding what professional football is all about and getting stronger and quicker and having a better touch, then he started to, you know, to help us. And he was a help to us, because a lot of people went to Billy and left other people alone.
You joined Preston in 1986 and won promotion your first season. I read a really good article looking back on that campaign, and they sort of said that the team's form was very up and down until you arrived, and they sort of noted that you were the final piece of a jigsaw. I'll have to send it to you. It was a really, really good read.
Oh, yeah.
So it must have been a good time again to join them. And did that move sort of come out of left field? Because obviously you were quite established at Hull City.
Yeah, I was established at Hull. Brian Horton was in the charge then, and we'd done well up to that point. He brought some new players in, some of his own players. Eventually, you get pushed a little bit to the sidelines, or he wants to try a different way. John McGrath had seen me, I think, a couple of times in the reserves and a couple of first-team games, and he wanted a certain type of midfield player for his team at the time. The team literally had applied for a re-election or near bottom the year before. And when he said to me, look, this is what I want you to do. I want you to come over, do this, this and this, but it's playing on plastic pitches. Oh, okay, it's interesting. But convinced me that you can help us do a lot of good things. All right. So I took that opportunity rather than stay at Hull for the last 6 months of my contract sort of thing. The opportunity might get less. And went over there in late November. What was that, 86? I think first game was something like December 86. And we went on a great run of not losing any games till nearly April, I think it was, which put us in good stead for promotion that year. We managed to get into the promotion slots and we went up, which was great.
Yeah, a bit of a promotion specialist at this point. I mean, you mentioned there about the plastic pitch, and that was one of the questions I had, because I do remember that kind of growing up that they had that plastic pitch. And it was a bit of a different plastic pitch to now, isn't it? Our kind of young listeners will think, oh yeah, what's quite a lot of teams have artificial surfaces. But that was quite a hard surface with quite a big bounce, wasn't it? And it must have taken quite a bit of getting used to.
Yeah, you had to change your style a little bit. You knew that, you know, it's concrete with a tiny bit of sand and a very, very thin green carpet, and if the ball bounces, it skips away and you've lost it. So our style was very much you had to play to feet within 1 yard of each other. If you put things in space, you've got to really think about the pace of the ball, because it will just run away. So playing like that in a back five, fullbacks pushing on all the time, you know, we could play out, we could play wide. Everything was to feet. It was quick. The ball ran true for you. So you knew if you were going to play a pass, it was going to get there. And a lot of teams didn't like it. So that was our advantage at home. We just had to make sure that when we play on muddy pitches and balls bouncing all over the place, that we're trying to play the same way, or we're trying to win the game in such a way, a game plan.
In terms of kind of endearing yourself to supporters, I mean, winning promotion is one thing, but I think you scored 14 goals the following season, and one of them was against Blackpool, their biggest rivals. So that's one way to get fans on your side, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I was lucky that playing in midfield, you know, one of us would hold, the other one would go. When we're playing balls up to the front lads, they would hold it up and allow you to get further forward if that you needed to. So that puts you in great positions. And on the pitch, you know that you're going to get a good return of ball, and you can have a good strike at goal. Or, you know, I always came in a bit late at the far post and headed them in from that way. It's quite hard to pick people up who are running in that speed and getting into areas. And the Blackpool game is one of those things where the rivalry, whenever you play Blackpool and Preston, is immense. And yes, I had a few weeks of good luck, I think, after that. I think I did a back heel or something like that, and it went into the near post, and that put us 1-0 up. And I think Gary Brazil scored the other, and the North End fans, they just love that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And yeah, I think they used to nickname you the ghost, didn't they, for these sort of late runs into the box?
Well, this was the gaffer at the time, John McGrath, and Les Chapman, the assistant, just kept saying, one minute I was the worm, because I kept popping up in places where no one knew I was. What are you doing there from left back? Next, you're at the far post. And then McGrath said, oh no, he's definitely the ghost. He ghosts in. No one knows where he is. The next minute he pops up and scores the vital goal. And sometimes it was a vital goal. It was 1-0 or to get the winner or something like that. So, yeah, different nicknames over the years you get that stick with different clubs. And the ghost was one of them. So, yeah, good times there. Good times. Scoring goals, 14 was in a season, is good for in midfield play, even in those days.
Very good. And you mentioned John McGrath. And I feel like any player that you kind of read up on who played for Preston around that time kind of loved him, really. He's like obviously very popular with the players.
It's popular, yeah. He had some crazy sayings and things that he would do. And that was John. That was the gaffer at the time. Frank Worthington was there. And there's lots of stories about Frank and what have you. Big Sam Allardyce. I used to room with Sam, which was great fun for six seasons. But the gaffer came up with all sorts of different sayings and motivated you. Various stories that I can't really tell you about, but yeah, it was good fun, but a hard man.
Yeah, Mick Rathbone, was he there as well? Is he one of your teammates?
Yeah, we called him Basil Rathbone. Basil, he was good at right back. He loved to slide tackle on the plastic pitch, and he put so much Vaseline on his legs to try and stop it, but it all come back with burns halfway up his leg. And you keep saying, "What are you doing that for? You know, there's no need." But Baz just loved it. And I think he's a physio. I think he was a physio at Manchester
City
as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you joined York City in 1992. Which did that feel like your career was coming a bit sort of full circle, coming back to your kind of hometown?
It's one of those things where I could have gone to York earlier. I think it was 86, 87. Been at Preston for about maybe 15 months, 16 months. And Bobby Saxton, I knew him anyway from Preston. And he was a York manager. And I think they offered about 18K for me, something like that, to say to go over with another lad, David Miller, I think, from Preston as a loanee, to try and help York out at that stage. But I'd only just got there, sort of thing. We'd got promotion, but Bobby wanted a certain player. And he thought, Swanee, will you come and give us a hand down here and get us on the right track? So that opportunity came up, and eventually when we got to the end of 92 season, Preston were having major financial issues, and I think there's about 10 or 14 of us were let go because they just couldn't afford the wages anymore, and they had to go down to the kids or get loanees in. So it was an opportunity to look around and see what's available as a free transfer. Eventually spoke to John Ward, and he convinced me that, you know, what he's doing here and what he needs, a bit of experience, a bit of structure in the side, organisation, grit, and you can get some goals. So, signed for you all.
Yeah, I was looking back, it was sort of like quite a relatively young side, wasn't it, Ben? I mean, were you pleasantly surprised in pre-season with the quality? Because given that they'd had a couple of really lean seasons, I'm thinking the likes of sort of Paul Barnes, John McCarthy, etc. At what point did you think, I could be adding another promotion here to my CV?
It's only when you're going through the actual league and you're playing different oppositions and you're realising where your standing is or how you're doing against them. We did well with Barnes. He was a goal scorer, full stop. You give him the ball, you wouldn't see it again because it's going to be in the back of the net. But at the same time, you know, we had John McCarthy on one side, Blackie or TC on the other side. And it was just, from our point of view, is you know, win the ball back, slot it into these guys, let them get on with it. And then if we can support with goals, great. But it was more about John going, you know, we needed a structure. He'd seen it, I think, the year before. It was a little bit unorganised in certain areas, and he just wanted that stability, especially down the middle of the side. The stability, when you look at it, with Dino in goal, brilliant. Stanley there, me and Pep, and then you had Barnsley up front. Then on the outside, you had Ginner and Andy Mack as well, who were steady players, you know, but brilliant in what they did, and did it all before as well. So, yeah, me, Barney, and I think John Borthwick came in.
That's right. And how did you find sort of playing alongside Nigel Pepper? Because I think beforehand, I think there'd been him and Sean Reid, who were both quite similar players, quite combative and wanted to get stuck in. Was that part of the structure that John was looking to bring, like almost not having two of the same sort of player in there?
Quite possibly. And, you know, I think with Pep, what I learned from him, he likes to play. He is hard tackler. Sometimes he goes in a little bit reckless and he might get a card for it or even a red one. You never know. But we could both play and both be aggressive, but at the same time, we can get forward or have key responsibilities from that point of view. You know, Pep was good on free kicks and penalties as well. That's a bonus. But if we're solid there, that allows the forwards to go. You can let Blackie go rather than pull him in on a string and say, stop there, Blackie, a minute. And then, right, let him go now. He's a racehorse. Off he goes. You got John on the other side. We can slot him in. Pep can make good balls to him. And then we've got Barnsley as the opportunity to like sit down either side or onside, offside sort of thing. If we can get that ball to him, then it takes the pressure off the defence. So we can go nil-nil and we know we're going to score. So that basis was the structure. A lot of John's thinking, I think, was down to make sure that we did that in training. So we knew exactly what everybody was doing, everybody was thinking, where our starting positions were, and we'd walk through it. And then once you walk through it, you understand what to do. Then you'd speed it up a bit and then you introduce maybe the rest of the squad at the back there, and then you play full 11 against 11. But John was like, get this structure right, then we can play from there. Yeah, and if this situation comes up, then we know we've dealt with it. The crossing and shooting, yeah, that's fine. Alan can take that, or Ricky, or whatever. Get that structure right. That allowed us then. We knew where everybody was. Makes it easier.
Yeah, and what was that different to other managers that you'd played for at that point? Was John quite meticulous sounding in his sort of...
Yeah, Mike Smith, he was the ex-Wales manager when I signed at Hull as a pro. You know, he brought all the Wales tactics and everything and a lot of advanced thinking into it and played a sweeper as well. And, you know, we've not seen that. So Mike brought all that in with the Welsh squad that he brought down, the management team. So they worked on that. They worked on scenarios or threes down the side or three people in the middle. How would that work? How do they pass the ball? How are we going to get forward? Other managers would do the same. Be on a Friday with Colin Appleton, and if I'm playing sweeper or midfield, it's a case of, right, this is what's going to happen. This person's going to do this. How are we going to react? We need to be here in that structure, ready to stop that, and then we can play. And then we play on our own from there. So each manager is slightly different, like McGrath. Make sure things are correct, and then he'd shoot off to the middle of the stands, not looking at anything. You think he's not looking at anything, and next minute he's, Swanee, seeing that, you need to be 10 yards to the right. We've got to stop that because this other person will do this, or the fullback will do that, or we've got an opportunity, we need to do more of this. So managers, coaches do it in different ways, but it's about setting the team up. And John Ward was good at that. Alan carried on the same tradition of keeping it in the same way, but at the same time making it good and fun and keeping the results going.
We mentioned sort of earlier in this interview that, you know, the amount of goals that you got throughout your career, you went the whole of this season, the regular season, without scoring. Were you conscious of that going into the playoffs, or was it that you were asked to play a different role? You mentioned there, like, and Ian Blackson said it to me, that you were the puppet master and had him on a bit of string. So were you kind of more kind of playing a different role to what you were at Preston, being the ghost and everything?
A little bit. Preston, you could play into the front people and it, you know, it's going to come back, and then you can play wide and then eventually get into the box. At York, with three of our forwards all going flat out forwards, as soon as you slot the ball to them, they're going to go straight at goal. So you're going to have to wait for a different passage of play to get there. Sometimes you're going to be in the box and it just doesn't happen. But you've got to keep going. Keep going to try and get in that space. But as long as you give it to Barney Blackie or to John McCarthy, you know they're going to get through or whatever. And other times, you know, they might be out slightly out position. It allows me or Pep to go into their spaces out wide and then get crosses in from there, or slot in ourselves and get opportunities. So slightly different, but at the same time, it's just when the opportunity arises. And we've got to go nil-nil as long as we can in certain games and then sneak it if we can. we've got to think about defensive wise.
Yeah, and you said there about sneaking it, which is obviously what happened against Bury. Your first goal for the club, brilliant bullet header. Two very, very close games decided by that goal. What's your memories of that game and your goal?
It's one of those things where we played well, really well. I think their keeper had a blinder in the first leg, but we believed that we could beat them. On the day, we could beat anybody, but on that night, the crowd was up for it. We were up for it. We knew we had to go 0-0 as long as we can, and you know, we'll get an opportunity, whether Barnsley will get an opportunity or Blackie or John or somebody else, you know, there'll be an opportunity. And it just happens that, you know, I said to Pep, I'll go this. You say, I'll go. And it's just came, Barney took it out wide. It's one of those things where you think, what type of cross is going to come in? And he's fired it in as if he's going to score. You know, it's one of those. He's not floated it into the far post for somebody. And I've just sneaked ahead of the marker and got in front of him and carried on my run and sort of read the flight of the ball and a nice little glancing header. And one of my ex-colleagues, Gary Kelly, had to pick it out the net.
And what was that feeling like? Because obviously it was right in front of a David Longhurst stand, wasn't it? Which was packed out and
yeah,
it was a good feeling.
You can see the faces as you're running by them, you know, and it's one of those things where most of the time I'm doing crosses or laying on balls for Barney, and this time he's laid one on for me for the first time. So I thought I'd better go and say thanks very much for that. But yeah, the crowd went wild, which is great. And then you've got to react to that and say, right, how do we play the last part of the game at? Because you don't want to keep going guns-ho, throwing everybody forward. You've got to think, right, how are we going to stop this coming back at us and creating another problem? So
yeah.
Get your head down and start playing again.
You mentioned that about sort of navigating that last part of the game, and how much were you kind of conscious that there was a chance of playing at Wembley? I didn't know if you'd played at Wembley before in your career and whether that had an impact, whether you got nervous before games.
No, I mean, we knew that if we win the game, we've got to go to Wembley. But when you score, you think, right, that's it. What's next? Because I can't carry on celebrating for the last 20 minutes. You know, it's got to be right. How are we going to now stop these from coming anywhere near our goal? You know, we've got to start at the front. Blackie, right, tuck in here. Don't do this. Well, you're not going on a run for the next 20 minutes. You're sitting there helping me out, helping the team out, helping Gina out. Make sure everybody's doing their jobs. And that goes ahead with Barney. You know, he's got to put some pressure on there, on those backline people to stop it getting anywhere near Dino. Because if he gets near him, he pulls off miraculous saves. So that's how he had to manage that game out. And then, you know, we won it at the end, which is great. Fantastic. Great celebration.
So, sorry, had you played at Wembley before? Had you?
No, I haven't. No.
So that was obviously a big thing. And do you think the sort of likes of yourself and Paul Stancliffe, you know, you mentioned there about telling Blackie what to do and using, I mean, obviously you were using your experience there, weren't you, as a player to think, right, we've still got 20 minutes here to see this game out. So do you think the sort of likes of you and Paul Stancliffe sort of appreciated Wembley a little bit more because you were sort of closer to the end of your career than you were at the start?
You can say that, yeah. I think everybody loved the Wembley experience, from getting your suits and in the middle from Marks and Spencer's in York sort of thing, going down on the coach with TC taking film footage on the video and what have you, to the night before. It's all about the experience, yeah, and how you're going to handle it. And we had a great bunch of lads, great squad at the time. And it was, of course, a great experience of going on to Wembley. Everybody, even as a schoolboy, you play those things out, you know, on the school field, don't you, all the time?
Yeah. And scoring at Wembley, which obviously you managed to do, your second goal in as many games. And we were so used to Paul Barnes getting found in the box, like you say, by midfielders. But this was the opposite, wasn't it? He threaded a great through ball for you to run onto. Is that the sort of run, again, that you would have done at Preston, sort of ghosting into the box?
McMillan onside. Barnes, good play from him. Tricky again, left foot through. Chance, goal! York in front! And unbelievably, York City take the lead here in extra time. Due reward indeed, and can you believe it? It's Gary Swan again. The man whose goal brought York City to Wembley. It was his first goal for the club, and now the only man in the team born in York gets the goal that could win promotion.
Yeah, it would be, because you can read those sort of things. You know that, you know, Andy Max played a great ball down the line, bounced it, you know, held it up sort of thing. And I'd seen that about 10 minutes earlier, and it didn't actually come off. I think they got a tackle in on Barnsley, but I was going on the other side of him. And with that one, I knew I had the leads at that stage on, I think it was Lennon who was marking me, Neil Lennon. And he didn't want to go back to his own goal. He's a forward player, you know, he's a midfield forward. So I thought, let's take him the other way, nearest to his own goal. And it's just one of those things. Barney, great Cruyff turn, saw me, slotted it in, and that's it. I'm at least a yard ahead of him, and it's a simple shot on target. You know, as long as it's on target, you've got a chance. So, yeah, how many minutes to go? Thinking, hang on, my name's in lights up there on that Wembley scoreboard. Right, how are we going to manage this? And crew kept coming back at us.
It's funny, I've got that down there. Like, were you sort of thinking about that potential, that kind of naming lights, and, you know, you could potentially be scoring the winning goal in a playoff final? But obviously, the late handball, what was going through your head at that time?
No, I wasn't really thinking about, you know, I've won this game or my naming lights. It's one of those things where let's keep the ball. So I think we had a spell on the right-hand side where we kept the ball quite well, you know, just little touches, keeping it like a little touch game for us. And then we did the same on the left-hand side and keeping it. And that's great. You know, we're away from their goal. Keep it there. You know, let's go out for a corner or a throw-in, slow the game down a little bit, anything we can at that point. And as you say, it's the last kick of the game, isn't it, really? Tuck coming up. The ball's going nowhere. It's going out of the box, really. Even if the centre-half wins the ball and tries to head it back into our area, you know, there's 10 of us there, plus the keeper. We could deal with that second ball. And unfortunately, for some reason, and we'll never know, as he was called later on, I think it was called Superman because he put his fist in the air, took, handballed it, which is unbelievable. But there you go. That's what happens in football.
Of course, it goes to penalties. Were you ever in the running to take a penalty?
No, we had the five regular takers that had been doing it all week. They'd tried it in another match previously. They were confident. They knew where they were going to stick the ball and stick with that. I think if it was anything, I'd be 6, 7, or 8, something like that. But yeah, it was great the way, you know, Dino saved it. Gino got the last one. And now they're football heroes, you know, for doing that, which is great.
Absolutely. And obviously that was your fourth promotion in your career, but your first in a final at Wembley. So how did it compare?
Well, it's one of those things. It's for any professional footballer, it's a career highlight, isn't it, playing at Wembley? The fact that you can score, which is, that's another tick in the box, and the fact that you won promotion as well. So, great. Absolutely great. My mother and father were there, my brother and what have you, watching the game. So, it was fantastic, those memories from that. And we were unlucky the next year in the playoffs. We played well all year. We knew we could do something in that league the way we started and the way we carried on.
I've got some questions to come about that, but just before we get to that, the open top bus parade around the city. I mean, I was thinking for you, that must have been really special for you, given you grew up in York, and there's lots of pictures of you with your cap on backwards and a big smile across your face, and you must have really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, all the lads enjoyed it. I think I was given a running commentary of which streets we are and who's down there and what have you, at the front and at the back of the bus. So it was all good, fun, great crowds, celebration. The fans, you know, we appreciate the fans because they do help you. They get behind you. They motivate you. And you love to make sure that you can deliver sometime. And that was one of the days we really delivered, not only for the town, but, you know, the club, the city, everybody around us.
Yeah, absolutely. And the following season you mentioned there was fantastic. And again, for you personally, 44 games, 4 goals, including one against Cardiff in a 5-0 win, which sounds pretty incredible now. But at the time, there was no real surprise in that result. I mean, that's the sort of thing that York City could do to teams. And there must have been a lot of confidence in you guys because, you know, you'd come into a high division, but you pretty much had the same players as the year before, didn't you? There was no fear there.
No, there's no fear. There's no fear. And at that stage, I think if we, you know, if anybody had an injury and someone else came in, they knew what the job was. And they could bring their own flair to it as well. I think I had an injury and Bush came in or something like that. You know, he could do the same thing, but add his little distinctive dribbling or whatever he does from that point of view. Somebody else came in. They knew the job. They knew the role because we've been training like every single day and making sure no one could stop what we were doing. And we had that confidence. And people were getting noticed at that stage by clubs because of what we were doing at that stage.
Yeah, and two of those players were Paul Barnes and John McCarthy, which was my next question. You know, they're two of the best players I think I've ever seen play for York City. Where do they sort of rank in terms of your overall career? Because you played with a lot of good players.
They're all good players. Some people have that added bit of magic. When I was at Hull, we had people like Bannister and Warboys, and people, and they were fantastic in their days. But at the same time, we had Keith Edwards, who prolific striker. Tony Norman, excellent goalkeeper. Steve McLaren in midfield, he was fantastic. And hurt his back and that curtailed a lot of his career after that. But as you go through all the different areas, you know, Frank Worthington, Sam Allardyce, even Emlyn Hughes came to Hull for a while. His professionalism was unbelievable, and you could learn so much by just watching him and how he prepared for games, how he played the games, how he did afterwards the games. And then at Preston, Alan Kelly, Irish goalkeeper, brilliant young lad, but absolutely, you could see from the start. Same with Dino, you could see how good they were at their craft. And Barnsley, you knew straight away, he was a goal scorer. You couldn't ask him to come and defend. You can ask him to put pressure on people. John McCarthy was up and down that wing so many times. You know, even at the Wembley, he could have won it 3 or 4 times for us. Or he could have passed it to me and TC, but obviously strikers don't pass when they get inside the box. So lots of good players, lots of quality players, and lots of players who scored good goals. And hopefully for my playing career, you know, scoring about, I don't know, 45 goals, like 47 goals, all from different positions, which is great. You know, good fun looking back at it.
Yeah, and I think Alan only used 16 players across the whole season, so he clearly trusted the group. So why was it that the likes of yourself and Ian Blackson were allowed to leave at the end of the campaign, especially given the huge contribution you'd given in 2 years? Was there a contract on offer? Was the length of the contract the problem? Would you have been happy to finish your career at York?
I thought I had a couple of seasons left in me at least, you know, 2 or 3, maybe even 4. You never know at those days. I thought I'd done enough contract-wise, but no, it was just, okay, this is the offer, take it or leave it. And it's not a penny more than what you're getting for the last 2 years. So, okay, thanks very much. I've done a lot for your club. Opportunities were out there. So I just said, okay, well, I'll take the opportunities. Mm. And sometimes it'll work out, sometimes it don't. You never know, do you?
No. And Ian Blackson said that when you both went to Scarborough, he told a quite a funny story about when you were announced to the crowd, and he said, there was a few boos, and then you were saying, oh, thank goodness I've only got a 1 year contract. And he was saying, oh, I've signed the 2. So clearly the Scarborough move didn't work out for Buffy. Did you feel that kind of straight away?
Well, Scarborough and York are obviously rivals. So you're going to a rival club and you've got to prove it to these people. You know, the fans need to know that you're doing something. I was lucky I scored 3 or 4 goals there. Good one in the FA Cup. So took us on an FA Cup run, which is great. Again, Scarborough was a club where they'd like to go further, but what funds have you got? And, you know, we were training at the top of the mountain there, you know, in fog and snow and all sorts of things. And that was hard work. And I think Ray at the time was trying, you know, build something, but it was hard work for him as well. So we had some good players. We could have done with a few more, and we did the best we could with what we had.
And then I think reports sort of say on sort of Wikipedia that you played in Hong Kong, but Ian Blackson tells me that you actually went out and played in China. Is that correct? How did you end up playing in Asia?
Just an agent who said, you know, do you want to come over? There was a few other lads who'd been over that way. I spoke to them about that, ex-Hull colleagues and what have you, and said, oh, well, okay, I've only got a few months left at Scarborough anyway. I'll go and try that for a little while. So tried that for a bit, and then over to Hong Kong.
Oh, so you played in China and Hong Kong then? So, I mean, I presume the money wasn't quite the Chinese Super League level that it would go on to. But what sort of experience was that like? It must have been totally different to playing in the old English Division 3, whatever it was.
Good technical players. There were a lot of expats there. So, you know, you're playing in a mixed side as such. And the heat, the humidity was outrageous. And you had to train in that and get used to it, you know, and then you're traveling in different places. I think you have to get used to the traveling side was different. The food was different. So everything was hard work. The Hong Kong bit was a bit easier because, again, it's mostly expats playing there. Pitches were better, that sort of thing. And training-wise, we were training, I think, at Happy Valley sort of thing, with the race course and around that area. So different experience altogether. But I got injured there when I came back with the ankle ligaments and Achilles. So couldn't really recover quite as well from that.
And then I'm always really interested in the sort of transition out of football. I think particularly players who've played in the sort of lower leagues as well, because you haven't got the kind of salaries like Premier League players have and can just see out the rest of your days. You've got to then kind of transition into whatever is next, I suppose, and your next step. So I think many would have expected you to sort of settle back in York, but you carved out a career in Sussex, I believe, and you've done things like managing leisure centres. So how easy was it coming out of that kind of football bubble and that you've been in for so long in your life?
It was hard work. Like you say, you know, we were earning a living, earning a wage. We weren't mega rich. We never had massive signing on fees or, you know, attendance fees or whatever it is, appearance fees. So we were like people in the street, but you walk out of that environment and, right, where does my next paycheck come from? So you had to work out how you're going to do that and look at different opportunities. Clubs were downsizing, so it wasn't a case of, oh, I'm going to be a coach over here or I'll stay here at this venue. That opportunity wasn't around there. Give it 5, 10 years, suddenly academy started springing up and Premier League and money started coming down. So at that stage, there wasn't a lot. So he had to find a new opportunity and moved to Sussex and found a new opportunity down there doing sport and leisure, sport development. That moved into leisure facility management because I was quite good at managing people, processes, a bit like football, but in a different environment. And then started doing bigger and bigger leisure centres and leisure complexes with ice rinks and lots of swimming pools, bowling lanes, all that. So, you know, you can end up with a big site, which we did at Guildford Spectrum.
Was it easier than managing Ian Blackstone on the left wing?
Just. I think I let him off a couple of times to let him go, but I had a big elastic band on him to pull him back to start. Right, you're sitting there for a minute, or give us 10 minutes in that position, then I'll let you go, sort of thing. But, you know, we might need you to do something. And that was great. And he was a good defender as well, because we'd stick him in the front post or something like that, and powerful, strong, tall, likes to head it, so he helped us in defence that way. But yeah, me, him and Gino were the three on that side, playing in either into Both or into Barnsley up front, and then we'd link across into Pep, sort of thing.
And as part of a transition out of football, is that when the moustache came off that you were quite famous for having? That was one of the questions from one of our listeners.
Yeah, I think for sort of like 20 years or 30 years it'd been there. I thought, well, I'd get rid of that. And when I met up with the lads again, I think at York, they said, I look like about 20 years younger. So it must have aged me a bit, having a tash there for a while. But yeah, it's all good fun.
And when you see sort of ex-players that you, I presume you keep in touch with some of them, is it almost like you've never been away? And I can imagine football's a very different industry to kind of other industries that you've then gone on and worked in.
It is, you know, you're only there for maybe one or two seasons. If you're lucky, you know, I was at Preston and Hull for six seasons. And you see different players. And yeah, you are back to that environment, that camaraderie, that character, that experience. Oh, do you remember this? Do you remember that? So it's good. And they can talk about all your ailments. When you've been playing football, you think, Jesus, no wonder my hips are hurting. And, oh, yeah, I've got that as well. Or, I've got this and that. So it's all good fun. And I remember speaking to Nigel Pepper after the Wembley bit. And he was telling me all the way through the game, he was struggling with energy. And he was asking me for a couple of dextrose tablets I had, and I popped it into him to give him a bit extra energy in his body. When we got to the end of the game, he said, I'm still feeling rough. And a couple of days later, he was a diabetic, which was the same as me. He'd watched me do it over the last couple of years. And tough time for Pep at that stage to have that. And I hope he's well and looking after himself.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely send him this interview on to him. Do you still, this final question, do you still follow your old clubs? Like you've mentioned there, 6 years at Hull and Preston, so I imagine they're very close to your heart. And York, although it was only two seasons, you know, you packed a lot into those. There were two very successful years at York. So do you still keep in touch with your old clubs and keep an eye on them?
I'll keep an eye on them, yeah. I keep an eye on anybody, you know, who's been through that process. You know, Steve McLaren at Hull. You know, we was at York together doing City Boys, and then we went as apprentice together, and then we went pro together. He was always a year in front of me, and then he got his various coaching roles and jobs after leaving, and you know, what he's doing now. So Steve, Sam Allardyce, Big Sam, I was rooming with my roommate for 6 years, the old fogies together, as they said. But you see what Sam's doing, and other people like that, you know, you look through it, and Paul Stancliffe as well, rooming with Stanny as well. So you see all those people and how they're doing, and you're pleased for them. You're pleased, you know, if they've got a move, or if they've done well, or they're doing coaching now. Really pleased for the guys. They've done well.
And just finally, just thank you so much for coming on. You have been a bucket list guest. It's been so hard to get hold of you. Eventually did it through LinkedIn, which was fantastic. That was the reason I joined LinkedIn, was just to make contact with you, to get you on the podcast. So thank you so much for giving up your time. It's been great to hear about your career, which was obviously a fantastic one. And you in a lot of York City fans' hearts for what you did at Wembley and everything. So thank you.
That's fine. I mean, I keep an eye on York, see what they're doing. It's unfortunate they didn't, you know, make the playoff final, but there's always next year to come. So good luck to them. Good luck to everybody else. And thank you, fans. York City fans are really important to the club, and they're really important to me. And we had a great day at Wembley.
Thank you. So huge thank you to Gary Swan for giving up his time to speak to us. He was an ultimate bucket list guest. I've been trying to get a contact for Gary for years and years. And as I mentioned at the end there, I had to set up a LinkedIn account to try and get hold of him, which thankfully I did. And he was well worth the wait for me. Very intelligent guy, spoke very articulately about his career. And yeah, I felt it was a different type of interview, but one that really complemented the series, and it was a great way to finish it off. So that was the last episode of the series, which kind of takes me up to 99
hospital ball episode, so naturally I'm going to be wanting to do a 100th one. So we'll see who that ends up being, but nothing set in stone as yet. I wouldn't have been able to do one episode, let alone 99, if it wasn't for the support of York Hospital Radio, people like James Charters, who's edited this interview, and many of the others in the past. Keith Lee as well, who does a lot of the kind of face-to-face interviews that we do, gives up his time to be in the studio. So lots of people, I know Hospital Ball kind of see it's just me, but it's definitely not the case. Lots of people help me out, and Paul Walton as well, who does the voiceovers at the start of interviews. So big thank you to everyone who helps be part of the Hospital Ball team. And for you guys listening, you know, 99 episodes, again, there'd be no point me doing it if people weren't listening. There's lots and lots of people comment on the episodes, which I really love, and write reviews and give us decent ratings and sponsor episodes. So, you know, massive thank you to everyone who does engage with York Hospital Ball. It is very much a charity podcast. It's raising money for York Hospital Radio, which provides a service for patients in York Hospital. Please do consider donating. It's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. Charity relies heavily on donations and sponsorship and things like that. We've recently just received a large, significant amount from the York City Past Players Golf Day, which I know Graham Bradbury very kindly has us as beneficiaries this year, as he did last year. So we really, really appreciate that. So if Graham is listening to this episode, again, big public thank you from myself for doing that. He's also been someone who, of those 99 episodes I talked about, probably provided me with at least 50% of those contacts for those people that have been on the podcast before. So a big thank you to him. So we'll probably try and get a 100th episode done. But in terms of series, probably looking at next year now. I'm very heavily involved in the Paddy McLaughlin testimonial year, so I want to put my kind of focus on that for the time being. I'll also be involved in the York City Supporters Trust social events again, so they'll end up on the Crux of It feed. So if you've not subscribed to that, please search for that on your usual podcast platforms. But until then, thanks again for listening to this series, and make sure you subscribe for if and when the 100th episode does drop. Thank you again.